Okay, let's just start off with number one, and then if it, you know, if the Lord leads into number two, we can do that. But we thought the first question was, as soon as you get to a campus or a place, how to get people to help you with your objective, because if you're going to get on with the job, you know, you have to get some helpers. And we thought we'd take up that question, and then if it goes on to next, we'll enter that. But just to start off, number one, how God starts a work. And if you, we'll go kind of fast through this, because I think scripture-wise, the principles are very obvious in the scriptures, and you can do more study on it later. But number one, I think this. God, if he wants to start a work, he always starts with a man. And we have, there's a lot of scripture on this. It says, you know, the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth looking for a man. And then it says in Ezekiel 22:30, it says, I sought for a man among them that could make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should not destroy it. And then to God's regret there, I think, he says, I found none. And he told what he had to do because there wasn't that man. Also, in Jeremiah 1, which was shared earlier in this conference, Jeremiah 1, 5-7, it talks about how God came down and spoke to Jeremiah. Or we can go to Isaiah 6, 8. It tells us how God came down and spoke to Isaiah, that a job he had to do. Or we also have it in John 1, you know, where God used a man. And it just relates the story of how every time God had a job to do, he came down and picked a man. And the emphasis on this is really great. And I thought in Isaiah 51, 2, well, why don't you, if we give references, why don't you just write them down and I'll try to read them. Because I don't want this especially to be a sermon. I just like to give you a little outline, and then if we have questions afterwards, we can take them up. It says this, and I think this really sheds some light on it. It says, look unto Abraham your father, and unto Sarah that bare you. For I called him alone, and blessed him, and increased him. Now we think about the children of Israel, we think, well, there's Jacob, and there's Isaac, and there's, you know, the 12, and there's, you know, all the people who came out. But when God looked at it, he said this whole Jewish race, and the line that Christ came through, and all this, the promises were carried on. He says, let me tell you how it really happened. He says, we, you know, clear away all the other people. And he says, it comes way back down to Abraham. You know, he says, because three things. He says, I called him alone. He didn't call a bunch. So every time God gets interested in starting work, whether it's in a campus, in a neighborhood, it's always one man God comes down and calls. One person to have the burden for this. And then it says, and I blessed him and I increased him. And if you look back to navigators, we can narrow it all down, it comes down to Dawson Trotman. Well, I think just in this, I wondered, because some people think, well, do I just wait till God comes down and says, hey, you? Or do we? Well, I think in the Bible there's two ways. I think we have a lot of examples where, like Gideon, I think is a very clear one, where God came down and says, Gideon, thou mighty man of valor. He said, who, me? You know, he was so shocked that, first of all, probably with the title, and secondly, he was terrified with the job. But see, there was another, and I think there's another way, and it doesn't really matter how it starts, is like Nehemiah. There Nehemiah was, the king's cupbearer, and I think he was really praying about Jerusalem. And when people came by, he says, he asked the people, now, how's it fare over there in Jerusalem? They said, oh, it's a terrible mess, you know. The walls are broken down, and, you know, the castle's rotting, and it's really a mess. Well, then, because of this burden that was on Jeremiah's heart, I think God looked down and thought, ooh, here's a man burdened about it. And so it really doesn't matter whether God reaches down and speaks to you about a special job or you're burdened about it, and then God leads you. It always starts with God and you getting a burden together. You know, you kind of meet with God, and then he tells you what to do. Well, that's number one, is a man and God. And like I told Jerry Kine, Jerry's here, but, you know, I told him, the work down in Corvallis, there's new work down there in Corvallis, Oregon. And I told him, well, Jerry, you know, your head is on the block. You know, if this work succeeds, you get the credit. And if it doesn't, you know, you're to blame. Because I don't think God blames the bunch, you know, or anything like that. It always, when problems, God always comes down to a man. If we look through the children of Israel, Achan, you know, one man fouled up. Or other times, it didn't succeed. Only God came down, or David, you know, when they numbered the people. Well, the people, they weren't so holy either, but God, you know, he said, okay, David, you're the one. And the people kind of got punished. It looked like a bad deal, but I think God holds one man responsible for every work, whether it's starting or whether it's increasing or whether it's succeeding. One man, God looks at and holds responsible. Number two is this. As soon as God gets a man he can kind of talk to and the man can talk to him, he goes this. God gives this man an objective. In other words, he gives him a job to do. Okay, and we have examples. We have Noah in Genesis 6. We have Abraham in Genesis 12. We have Moses. You know, and all through the Bible. We have John the Baptist. We have, you know, Jesus. We have Paul. As soon as he gets the man so they can kind of communicate back and forth, and then he says, now here's the job I want you to do. It seems like almost every time someone, every time that God gives a man a job, there's always problems. And, well, you know the problem with Abraham. Abraham said, oh, I can't speak. You know, God really didn't get concerned about Abraham's little old problem. See, because every time, God had an answer for him. And, I think there's, and as soon as God gives you, you talk to God and you figure out an objective that God gives you, bango, the very next thing that's going to happen, you're going to have problems that you never believed would happen. Because when I went to Lincoln, I went out there, I had some promises, and boy, I thought, ooh. As soon as I got there, Dr. Gould, you know our friend Dr. Gould, he called up. Oh, I talked to him for 10 minutes. I just listened. Russ, we had an agreement on the campus that every Methodist you talk to, you have to give me his name and address, and Reverend White, that's Jim White that we know, Reverend White and I agreed on this, and we've talked to the chancellor, and boy, you had problems with the navigators, and yeah, Dr. Gould. Well, I didn't know what to tell him. You know, I was new there, and so at the end of the conversation, well, end of me listening to him for 10 minutes, I said, well, Dr. Gould, I don't think I can do this. I just shared with him. I said, you know, I was in Lincoln 5 years ago, and we didn't have an agreement like this. Click. Well, I thought, whew, at least I told him I don't think I could do, you know, I could do that. The next day I got a letter from him saying, thank you very much, Mr. Johnson, for agreeing to carry on the agreement that we've had for years. And I didn't know what to do. I was frightened. You know, I had my first little assignment out there, and I didn't want to blow the whole works, you know, right off the bat. Because the chancellor, he wasn't really too happy with the navigators, and he's still not. But you know, I thought, well, 2 days, Jim Downing's going to come through, and I'll talk to him. So I thought, I can last it for a couple days. And then, phone call, Jim Downing's not coming. So 3 weeks later, Bob Foster was going to come through, and I thought, ooh, 3 weeks, well. So I'd walk in the park, and boy, it was really bugging me. You know, what do I do? And I didn't know whether to, I really didn't know. And I thought, well, Foster comes through, I'll talk to him. And phone call, Foster's not coming. You know, and one day I remember I was walking out by the freeway and I thought, nuts, God gave me some promises to put me here. You know, either I have to believe that it was those promises, you know, or carry on that objective, or believe Dr. Gould. So I went home, I remember went home, got that little old letter, file 13, and after that, I said, how you doing, Dr. Gould? I see he never brought it up again. But see, I think God really put me to the test on that to see if I'd carry on the objective. So every time God gives you an objective, there's going to be big obstacles that you're going to have to come back and see and determine in your heart, am I going to carry on the objectives or am I going to, you know, hedge away because of the opposition? Because it'll come. And it'll come in forms that you never guessed possible. Well, we could go up. And I think how much God blesses you is determined on how much you are willing to carry on with that objective. Well, we could go into a lot of stories here, but I think put down this verse, 1 Kings 20:40. Who knows that verse? The story is, they gave the servant a job to keep a prisoner. His only one job, very simple, keep this prisoner. So they came back to check on him and said, hey, where's the prisoner? He says, well, as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone. Well, that's good, and appreciate you being busy, but where's the prisoner? See, a lot of times, God gives us a simple little objective, And we get busy over here and we forget about this. So why should God bless us? I have a friend back in Nebraska, Reverend Ivan Olson. He started 37 churches now or something like that. And I said, good night, how's that happen? You know? He says, well, I asked him, I couldn't figure it out. He says, I've always kind of tried to be God's errand boy. He kind of tells me what to do and I do it. You know, that's not, you know, and I, oh, come on now, I must be, you know. I talked to Dr. F. He says, how come God blessed you so? You know, back to the Bible broadcast. Man, I don't know. You know, he couldn't figure it out. But I think, see, like, and I heard since this summer, Reverend Olson shared. He says, you know, my objective is to get the gospel out. And in the wake of that, 35 new churches, Maranatha Bible Camp, you know, there's more things in the, you know, just the wake of that is blessing people around the world. Because he stuck with that little bitty job that God gave him to do. That's important. Okay, number three is this. As soon as God gives the objective, he gives one other thing, and that's he gives the promise of his presence and his power. Those two things. He gives the promise of his presence and his power. Let's see, is it... what time is it? Time's up, isn't it? Okay, his presence and power. Okay, 10:15. We'll try to wrap this up so we can get questions. See, and this is a lot more important than the human weaknesses that we have. See, we go into campus and we think, ooh, what would I have to do? I wouldn't know what to say to the dorm counselor. It didn't matter. See, Moses had the same problem. What would I say to Pharaoh? God says, I'll be with your mouth. See, and every time we have a fear or doubt inside, he says, no, I'm with you. Don't worry about that. That's my problem, not yours. All we have to do is to get on with the objective just as if we are going to accomplish it by ourselves. And then God, kind of in the wake of this, he picks up and answers the problems as long as we stick to the objective, because his promise of power and presence is always with us. Well, and you know, if we go to the New Testament, the same thing, Matthew 28. You know, before he gives out the Great Commission, what does he do? He says, all power is given unto me, and I'm with you. Two things, see? Power and presence. Every time this came about, Abraham, he gave that promise, I'll be with you. And when he's with you, we got power, see? So we're really on the end club here when it comes, you know, on getting a job done, because we got his presence and his power. Thirdly is this, and I think probably most important, is what Boardman talked about this morning and Doug talked about last night. As soon as God, you meet with God, and he gives you an objective, and he shares promises with you from the Scriptures as to what he's going to do, then I think the decision comes down to us. Here's where we come in. All the rest of it just has to do with God. Now, this comes to us. We have to be wholly committed to four things. Number one, we personally have to be wholly committed to God, to his promises, to the objective, and to his methods. Four things: God, his promises, his objective, and his methods. See, we have it in Joshua 1:3. If we just take a few examples here. One, the method. God says, go over there and take Jericho. Really a stupid method. You know, walk around the city seven times. And I mean, it was really hard to figure out. Or in 1 Samuel 13, they had this little plan where Jonathan, his armor bearer, were going to go up, and they completely ignored the principle of war of surprise. In fact, their plan was to crawl over there and say, hey, you guys, here we are. And they said, if they say come up to us, then we'll know God is in it. What a dumb plan. But see, it was God's plan. See, and so it doesn't matter. We have to, you know, take time and prayer and figure out what also God's plan, God's method is, because that's important. See, Moses was the right man. He had the right objective. He was dealing with the right people in the right place. He had the wrong method. He became a murderer instead of a missionary. You know, wrong method. That wasn't God's method at all. And he was the right man. He was doing the right job. Fouled up on the method. I think another on this. And the reason I put that in order, God, His promises, His objective, and His method is this. Because if God gives you a job, there's going to be times come when God is going to have to come before the job. And that's really going to be hard on you. It's hard on me. Because God's going to give us things to do that will look like they will completely kill the work. Here, God gave Abraham a job. What was his job? What was Abraham's job?
Build a nation.
All right, build a nation. What?
Be the father of a new nation.
Yeah, father of a new nation. Okay, yeah. His plan was what? Through a son. Okay, then as the son grew up, God says, oh, by the way, Abraham, I want you to take Isaac up on the mountain. See, Abraham could have said, now, God, let's talk this over because you did give me a job. And he did, didn't he? But see, God wanted to make sure that Abraham was putting God first and not this little plan they had. And every time, see, we get a work started, somewhere God's going to put our finger on us and say, Russ, who are you putting first? You know, the job I gave you or me? And that's really tough. And it'll come in forms of maybe things God wants you to do. I think for me, it comes the hardest when some little thing comes up and God speaks to me about lying or something. And he said, well, boy, I think you should, you know, call up. I remember once I borrowed a shotgun from a guy, and when I took it back, I forget all the details, but afterwards I thought, you know, that really wasn't honest what I told him. And as I prayed, now, God, is there anything in my life? Well, yeah, that shotgun, that's you know. Okay, God, that was really sin. Now, is there anything else? Yeah, it's shotgun, you know. See, navigator representative, liar. Hello? Yes? See, that's really hard. But when God puts his finger on you, that's really tough. Because then you have to come to the place saying, okay, God, you're before the work. You know, the verse, John 12:24 says, except a corn of wheat fall on the ground and die, it abides alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. Well, we apply that to ourselves, but I think a lot of time God works that out in us by the works that we have to do. And I think every work has to come to the place of death in itself in us before God really prospers it. And that's, you know, a lot of struggle goes on when that happens. But that's why we have to be totally committed to God first, His promises, the objective, and His methods. Okay, and then last of all, and I'll just share a couple of verses on this because this is such a part of the navigators. As we personally start on with the objective, just as if it totally depends on us, God adds a team. It's God's problem to add a team. Our job is to get on with the job that He's given us. And here's the way it works out. In 1 Samuel 22, it tells about the team that God gave to David. What a bunch. It says, and everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented gathered themselves unto him, and he became captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men. What a motley bunch. Three D's: distress, in debt, and discontented. See, when you go out to start a work, this is the kind of bunch you're going to have to start with. You know, like people come and say, well, we've been out there 6 months. We really don't have much of a team, kind of a bunch. And boy, they got some problems and things. But I think this is the way God does it. Because 1 Chronicles 12, it talks about, well, there's a whole chapter. I think maybe we can start at 21. You can read the whole chapter here. But it says, and they that helped David against the band of rovers. Oh, no, let's go clear back to verse 1. It says, now these are they which came to David to Ziklag. That was way back. This was part of that 400 bunch. The disgruntled, the in debt, the discontented. It says, while yet he kept himself close because Saul was son of Kish. In other words, of these people who came back to Ziklag, now listen to these same 400. It says, and they helped David against the band of rovers, for they were all mighty men of valor, and were captains in the host. For at that time, day by day, there came to David to help him until there was a great host like the host of God. In other words, he started with this 400, and they stuck with him, and he helped them, and they helped him. And then he continued to add to this bunch. And now listen to some of these people. And these are the number of the bands that were ready, armed to war, and came to David in Hebron to turn the kingdom of Saul to him, according to the word of the Lord. And then there's just a list of people. Or over in 32, it says, which were men that had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. The heads of them were 200, and it tells. And in 33, it says, of Zebulun, such as went out to battle, expert in war with all the instruments of war, 50,000 which could keep rank. They were not of double heart. You think, ooh, that's the kind of team I'm looking for. But do you know that kind of team came out of that 400? But it's because David, see, was getting on with the job that God gave him to do, and so he gave him a bunch. And he took this bunch, see, and made mighty men of valor, armed for the battle, and all these things. And that's God's problem. See, and if you go out to a place and think, ooh, I've got to get a team, and start trying to collect a team around you, see, I think it's far more important to get on with the objective that God gave you to do. And then God kind of adds the team. And they might not look much like a team, but see, God will take and make them into the kind of men that will be pleasing to Him and useful. Okay, that's outline. Well, let me just share, two or three minutes here, some of the things I've learned. And I've been to about eight places now, or nine, something like that. When I was a new Christian, I don't know whether you can write this down or not. I was at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and I was just a new Christian. We were trying to get a work going, and we'd get together and pray over in the chapel, and we'd argue with those Lutherans about getting baptized, and that was kind of our way to get in the Word. We were sure they were wrong, and we'd dig in the Word every day to try to convince them. But then we'd go out and preach, and our tactics were a little different then. We'd get in the car. This Herb Schleichberg had a car. I was a Jewish fellow, and so we'd get about four of us. We were so frightened inside, we'd go pick up a hitchhiker, four against one, and we'd drive into Fayetteville, North Carolina, and we'd preach to him, and then we'd let him out, and we'd go get another, and drive back and forth, one at a time, because that's about all we could take, all the courage we had. But God worked. You know, I don't know anybody today that are still around from that. But then I went to Iowa State, and this was in 56. That's when Jerry Marshall and Ray Hall and the bunch were there. We really didn't know what to do, and about claiming promises and that. We did do Bible study together and share the Word, and then every morning at 11 o'clock, we'd get together to pray. There were three of us, Jerry Marshall, Bill Woody, who's a businessman down in Phoenix now, and myself in Jerry's apartment, to pray for the campus. And every Thursday night, we'd go out in evangelism. Well, I think, you know, in our ignorance, we did what was right. Three things. I think, one, preach. Two, pray. And three, the promises. The three P's. And I think those are the three basic elements anywhere in the world that'll work. But we didn't know that. But, you know, I know there's people around today. I mean, some of that, well, Bill Arndt, you know him, he's working on his PhD, he's here. Ray Ho, a lot of guys came in. Don McDonald. And people are at this conference that came out of that. And I think it's because, as I look back at that, it's because that 11 o'clock prayer meeting. And then Thursday night, we'd go out and see what God was going to do. Well, then I went to Lincoln. I was fired up about going here preaching. And this one, I lived with Leroy. Don McDonald and I lived together then. And so five, six times a week, we'd go out to air base, Lincoln Air Base. And, man, we preached for almost 9 months in a row. I had promises, too. Promises and preaching is what I was doing. And that whole, all that effort, I think we had about six or seven decisions. I don't know where one of the guys are today, and I'm not sure any of them got underway. Because I forgot one thing. You got to pray. Well, then, I wasn't very smart. Still not. So I came to Glenary. My next assignment was to come here at Glenary, and so I was going around thinking, boy, you got to watch out about too much preaching. I was preaching that around Glenary here, thinking, oh, that's bad business, too much preaching. And so I tried to get a little ministry going down here at this heathen temple down here. I won't name it. So I thought, boy, you got to watch out preaching. So I thought, go in there and win a hearing and, you know, all this sort of thing. So I got some promises. I still haven't recorded my Bible. And I pray. You know what came out of that? Whole year. In fact, 14 months. Nothing. 2 years wasted. Well, then the next assignment was with Ron York in Okinawa. Well, every morning, after breakfast, we get together for an hour to pray. And together, we got promises on Okinawa, and then we go out preaching. Well, I see guys up there, Scott Sprague, who's heading up to work out here from Okinawa. See those three little... So, you know, it took me all that transition to realize that, hey, there's three basic elements you have to have to get a work going and to make it last. And then came back to Colorado Springs here, and that's when, let's see, who's in that bunch? That's when we went to Greeley. That was just a little deal. But then Lincoln, I realized, boy, Russ, you know, forget all this running around, because I thought evangelism was a good deal, and I thought men were raised up because of evangelism, but that's not true. Men are raised up because of prayer. Matthew 9, there's no other way. Now you say, where does evangelism fit in? I think it's this. Men are raised up because of prayer offered for laborers in the midst of evangelism. Now you can sit here and pray in this castle, you know, 6 hours a day for Colorado Springs, and I think nothing will happen, because you got to go out there and kind of sweep up the spoil. And you pray, and then evangelism, all you do is just go up and kind of round up the guys you prayed for. That's all evangelism does. And then you have to have some promises, because you want to make sure you're doing what God's doing. And I share with the guys back there, it's kind of a joke. I say, well, I kind of figure out where the blessing of God is pouring out, and I run and stand by the spout. You know, because no need to work over here if God's working over there, because nothing will happen. See, and that's why you need the promises, just to kind of figure out where the spout's coming out and run and stand under the blessing. See? Well, and I think prayer in here is Isaiah, write this verse down. Isaiah 62:7. It says this. Maybe I have the wrong reference. 62? Yes, it says, and give him no rest till he establish, till he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth. In other words, give God no rest till he establish, till he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth. See, and I think, and in fact, a young guy shared with me here, he says, well, we believe in the navigators that you can move in to a campus or a base and just, you know, say, God, we're not moving till you bless. See, I think we want to be careful we're not running around wildly looking for this spout. You know, because a lot of times we can just kind of move up and say, well, God, now we're going to, you know, we believe you've led us here, and we're going to anchor right here until you bless. You know, if it takes 5 years, 10 years, 20, it doesn't matter, we're going to stay. And that's what the verse says. It says, and give him no rest till they establish, till he make, you know, wherever you are, Bellingham, Corvallis, you know, wherever you are, until he makes that a praise in the earth. I think that's the key. Okay, questions. Good grief. Too much preaching. Let's see, what time does this get over? In 10 minutes? Is that right? Quarter after. Okay, we got 25 minutes. All right. I don't know, that's kind of a quickie, but I think those three elements, prayer, preaching, and promises. Because if you don't have promises, you get pretty confused. See, all promises are saying, God, what do you want to do? And he says that, so you kind of write down, okay, God, that's what you want to do. I'll be your helper. That's a lot easier. Dr. F. shared once. He says, some people think the will of God is like a paddle boat on a river. It's just kind of uphill all the way. God, I know you don't want to work, but I'll, you know, just, you know, a lot of grunt. He says, it's not that at all. Where other people, he says, they get totally off. He says, they think it's kind of like you just turn the boat around and, you know, shut down the steam and kind of drift wherever you want, you know, wherever the river goes. He says, that's not it either. He says, but it is. He says, you figure out which way the river's going, and then you just, you know, crank up the steam and go full steam ahead downstream. He says, God's going that direction anyway, but he says, you work in that direction also. So it's both. It's not just one. It's not fighting the system. Thank God you have to work here. No. Or I think, well, God's going to work, so I'll let it go. See, you figure out where God's working and then, you know, really work at that. Okay, Jay.
You mentioned that God's part of the thing that seems to me is the further ahead, it's like you go to do by stuff. Well, now I'm standing there on one foot.
All right, okay. And I think that's a good point. In fact, I'm getting really against sending out one person all by his lonesome, because I think the Spirit of God does work in a bunch. But one man has to be responsible. See, if the leader, whoever God picks out, he doesn't have to be more spiritual than anyone else. And to be the leader, see, it's, and I think George Sanchez is going to preach on this, you don't have to be more spiritual or anything, but if God has spoken to you and you have some promises and you take the responsibility, God's going to bless in proportion to your belief of the promises. One person. But God doesn't seem to bless this bunch that goes in. I think he always holds one man responsible. So like I talked to Jerry, I think Jerry down there, he's responsible for Corvallis. You know, if it goes, good deal. If it doesn't, I don't think it's my fault. Now, if some other things don't happen, I think it's my fault, see? You know, it all depends which block your head is on. You know, somewhere down there, you know, you got to kind of be careful, see? God has you on every one, see? So, but I think one man, he's responsible. I just don't believe this, you know, God blessing the bunch. And scripturally, because I think he always singles out that man. And if the bunch fouls up, it's always the man who gets... Well, okay, let's take Moses. Who was at fault when the people were complaining about the bitter water? The people, weren't they? Moses wasn't complaining, doesn't look like to me. So Moses got over and prayed, what should I do? And he said, well, go down and speak to the rock. Well, Moses got down there and kind of lost the victory and hit the rock, right? Who got held responsible? Moses. See, the judgment, you know, is more severe for the leader. So I think God really does hold one man responsible. That's all I'm saying. I don't think it's the onward going of the work has so much to do with one man. But I think God does hold one man responsible. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you get together with two or three fellows that are with you in the work, how do you come to the decision to word of trust and they're going to pray and evangelize? You got the problem. You kind of come together and thrash around and look, what about this situation that? Or do you, the leader, kind of say, well, I think I'll do this? And kind of dictate the thing? Or how do you go about that?
Okay. Who wants to answer that? Who started new work? Bill Cole, you have.
What's that question?
Okay, do you get kind of the bunch together and say, what should we do? Or do you kind of say, no, this is what we're going
to
do?
Well, I got the
I see. Well, did you dictate to yourself or did you get counsel?
Well,
help your security, huh?
Before I'm on, I learned you guys. When I was 7, I used to go up and pray for all kinds of objectives, and we'd go out and nothing would happen, and play until we got all things. We'd turn around and thank God. But I think, are you asked to determine where?
Yeah, I think, is your question more if two or three or four of you go into a campus? Isn't that your question? Okay, who determines where you hit?
I've never had that situation.
Okay, who's had that situation?
We had Harvard.
Harvard, okay.
I started from the graduate school, and we had one guy.
Okay, there were two of you went in then.
Well, he became Christian, but he didn't grow. And I thought, well, God is working in graduate school. So it seemed like God was bringing the fresh new life. A phone call. Hi, I'm from the Cedar. I'm from Washington. I've been navigating out there at a conference. I would help. God is working. Impression of fire. In other words, the question is explain what God is working.
In other words, so you went in by yourself and you kind of looked for the spouse and sort of, you thought it was over here and you.
Yeah, when you've got younger guys, I think you can ask God what He's directing them. You know, how do they feel on their heart? Who should we get together with? Who should we work with? But the leader, you're going to have to make that decision.
Okay, Jim. Listen, two of you went up there. Three of you.
We had three men in dorm, and we tried to get something going in all three. And, you know, I don't kind of do this sort of thing. So it sounded like a pretty good idea. One of the guys brought up the feeling, why don't we just kind of go where the Spirit leads? You know, and so he kind of went off on three directions. God bless, but not, you know, it was kind of an uneasiness about it. Things that we have. So this year, I felt as though we should concentrate on one place, one goal, and not spread out. Well, last year, one of the guys brought up the idea that we should go out and hit as many places as possible. And I kind of thought that's a good idea. But I learned by experience that that wasn't a good idea. And it's better to concentrate. So when we came back this year, I said, guys, let's concentrate. And I think if they had said no, I would have said, let's concentrate. But I had to learn by experience. And I think there are some decisions that you have to say, this is the way we're going to do it. But there aren't too many of those. I think most of the time you want to fool the idea and get ideas from your guys, so they'll come up with better ideas than you can.
In other words, so on this question, you say, probably the leader has to. Okay, does that answer your question? You kind of had the situation with three of you going. Okay, one, two, three. Whoop, one back there, two, three. Okay? Yeah, I think that's a good word because, see, God. Committing your way to God is not especially, scriptural. I think you can get all the ideas, but pretty soon the leader has to make the decision, this is what we're going to do. I think this is the way we operate in the Navigators. Everybody kind of gets in and shares, but pretty soon when Lauren says, then that's what we do. And I think this is a good plan. We all have to kind of learn this. You can't just take a bunch that's not yours either way. You see, it might take them the whole year just to kind of win their hearts. Because you might have said, this is the way, and they still help, see, and then you. So sometimes it does take a while, just to win their hearts, because it is the responsibility of the leader to win the follower's heart. Some people walk in, I'm the navigator on campus, now where are you going to follow me? Well, they say, where are we going to follow you? We're not. See, and so, the leader has to win the follower's heart. Okay, Charlie? But you still had to make that decision, right? Yeah. Right. Okay, who was next? Larry? Yeah, I think the same thing is true on follow-up. You're helping a new babe. You don't have to explain to him the 14 reasons why I memorize. Say, hey, how about get your pencil out? We'll memorize this verse. That's kind of the autocratic. And then later on you say, now, do you think you should review 40 or 80 a week? Or a year, or however, whatever your standards are. Okay, good. That's right. It is. It's not a hard and fast thing. It's kind of graded according to the people you have around. Who else? Bill? Or we? Okay, Bill, we'll take you first.
One guy being responsible, he is. I think he's going to be more aware of it than he has. So it's kind of a healthy thing.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's a kind of a fair
view. Well, if he knows the responsibilities on him. Right. Now, he doesn't have to be the dictator. I think, a lot of you kind of get together and talk over with the boys and all this, but pretty soon, God holds you responsible. If you botch it, well, I know whether God does, but I know does. If he botches up, they say, hey, Charlie, what's the deal? See, and I think God does the same. Yes.
Lisa, you were talking about God and then promises and objectives, but God lays these on the heart of an individual. Now, for example, a couple weeks ago, God gave me an objective for my ministry. And so I presented this objective, the particular thing that I wanted to do, and then suggested a method of accomplishing this objective. Well, the guy followed me in the objective, but what I really needed was information on how to accomplish this objective, to find out whether the plan that I had was really good or wasn't. And so I think that God will give you an objective, and how you carry that out, you can discuss that. But you come right down that line to God, the promise to the objective. And then after that,
the method.
You make key decisions, but you can get information after you get the objective, then you can get information from the guy on how to carry that out.
Right. Oh, yeah. I think you have to get everybody involved. So you have to kind of divide up. The example we have of this is in Nehemiah. You know, Nehemiah had the from God. He had the word from God. He had the objective. And then, but when he got there, he kind of shared with the elders and said, you know, what God had put in his heart. So they kind of thought, ooh, good deal. And they'd seen how he'd come there and how he'd, you know, got lumber and all that sort of thing. And but then they had a division of labor. You'd build this little part, and you build the gates, and you build something else. So I think when it comes down to that level, then you have to have this working it out. Yes?
How far do you go with the experimental approach to find the will of God? And then plant in here and see what happens, and then just wait for it. You feel like that. Experimental method to find the will of God.
Oh, man, I'd experiment every week. Oh, two times a week. I mean, because God works. Follow the Spirit of God, you follow an unmarked path no one else has ever been on, and if you share it with someone, they'll say, what a dumb plan. But that's it seems to me the Spirit goes in 20 directions. You know, one each week. This week it's this way, and that's why we have to follow the Spirit of God. You really have to be flexible. So experimental projects, man, I'm for one a week. You know, not just for experiment's sake, but I think a lot of times God really works through those things, and we think, how do we get that idea? You know, and then we try one experiment, and then God gives a little pattern to follow after that, and then brings in another, and a little pattern after that, and that sort of thing. Jim?
May I ask another question?
Okay, change subject, yeah.
Before that God has started to give
okay, Jerry, you've got, let me tell the situation in Corvallis. You went there 2 months ago, right? So 2 months ago, our contact list numbered 13,000. Navigator contact list, nothing. So now you have a bunch. Of how many you got in Bible study now? Or you in the
Bible study now.
Okay, how do you do that? How do you answer that question? Or what are you doing? What did you do last week? I need to know too. I have a little checkup here going on. So,
well,
to
back up, first of all, the first 6 weeks were just evangelism, you know, and always. And then we had a benefit for us on the weekend. We had four carloads in Portland, Seattle. And then the following 2 weeks was just basically follow on these contacts we had that Saturday, plus other contacts. And that's when the fall we call it. Now we're working with
okay, now his question is that, let me see if I understand. The question is, how do you relate these new people to bigger things that are happening around the... Okay, now you answered one part, right? You get other people to come in and let them see other people. That was one, right? Okay, now what else?
I think probably not in my mind.
Have you done any of that?
We haven't yet. Well, with one fellow on the support one weekend. And he also was a Christian, 10 years, 3, 5 years. And he went with us on
course, it's a little hard only knowing him for a couple months. But that's one step. You know, you get one guy out, and then he comes back and shares war stories. That's what you're saying, right? You know, even with one is a good deal. Does that answer your question?
Well, I want to clarify that you probably meant within the Navigator work, that a lot of the people within the Navigator work, not taking more to their outfits and doing churches.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see.
That's all I think.
You'll never fit in overseas, but that's the way to think here. Okay, now, let me ask a question. Are you talking about three times a week you have a prayer meeting? Are these new people that you've met in the last 2 weeks, 2 months? Do you have them in a dorm? Do you meet in their dorm, or what do you do?
One dorm room out of a three dorm room, we have one man who's kind of available and they can bring them in. So we just bring them in there for prayer.
How many of the new people come, let's say, once a week? Would they be new Christians?
Except for they are either Christians that we've never contacted before and who are wanting to join, or that they're new Christians that we've contacted.
Mm-hmm. See, that's a terrific idea there, because they do have to. See, that's probably a step down. Who asked the question about how do you relate them to other? Oh, that's probably the first answer. I mean, the first thing you have to do, you have to relate them to each other, right? On the little dorm or campus. And then next, I think you kind of answered the second place. You take them on trips or have other people come in. And your question wasn't on the Navigator structure, was it?
No, just what God is doing.
Yeah, in other places, that's what. But as you see other Christians, but there I think we have a couple answers. One is what you do first. You relate them to each other on the campus. And secondly, you try to, if they won't go to another, just bring in the people from another campus. Because that really does. They start seeing all these people and they think it's happening all over the world. And it is, you know, just that. But that really kind of proves to them it is. Okay, let's go to Paul first. In other words, how much time do you spend with a slow leak is what you're asking. I see. Okay, who wants to answer that? Jim?
Well, I think the church has a good idea. I used to have a down church attendance as far as, you know, but that is a basic requirement for our local church. They figure
right.
Early on Sunday morning for the new Christians, not real early, 9:30.
Yeah.
They've been drunk the night before or something.
They can still make it, yeah. Okay, good. Now, which is the common denominator? The Sunday morning or the Saturday night? Go ahead. Can I summarize this? I don't know a summary. Are you saying that you don't, in answer to his question, how do you know which guy to spend time with? You let them decide which guy. You set up a little
you give them
standard.
What you feel and the Lord wants them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And where
it
will be.
Right.
How about memorizing the verse? Let's go with this.
Mm-hmm.
Memorizing and say,
mm-hmm. In other words, you'll take him as far as he wants to go. I see. Does that help you? Jerry?
That's what it means. That helps out for we set up our standard as book one. Yes, yeah. Every warm body is book one. And if a non-Christian forces to sit in with a Christian, it's not forced to dwell on keep going or not. And some will keep going maybe anyway, but at least this is the first step.
He may want that. I mean, he may not do the first day. But then a couple, 3 weeks later, he may do it or do something else.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a consistent pattern that seems to be going on, he isn't willing to do anything that you try. And probably he's not the guy who's in time.
In other words, you've got this whole, you can say a verse, memorize, come to the Bible study, come over to the house for fun and games, and pretty soon if it, you know, you get a five-time loser, then you think he probably doesn't want to go on. You kind of, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't think we should say we'll never go on
right,
with God.
Yeah.
But your time is not yours, it's God's. And God wants you to spend time with people who are interested in going on with Him. And He will give you the people that are thankful for you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't figure out who they are. You just kind of got to throw out things and let them make their own decisions.
Yeah, I think that's good. You know, just. You got to have kind of graded responsibility for every person. Now, if you got a key man, I think every time we take a trip, he should be in the car. You know, unless broken leg or something, you know. But other people aren't that way. You say you kind of throw a little bait to them, and if they still keep grabbing on, you know, you kind of help them as far as they want to go. I just shudder when I hear. In fact, I just heard this morning, a guy says, I'm going to tell him in the next 3 weeks, if he doesn't shape up, he's out. I think, wait, you know, because most of us wouldn't be here if someone had told us that. You know, and I think if a guy still wants to go on, we got to help him. Now, there's some people, so if you get one guy who's really a gunner on Bible study, but nothing else, a lot of times they kind of fake us out sometimes. You know, they're going down this track so hard, we say, how about this? And so I think you need kind of four or five tricks in your bag, you know, that you can do to see if they... if they really want to, or they just like this one track. So somebody else with their hand up. Larry. Oh, excuse me, Tom, you're next.
Good idea to have your kind of just to limit yourself and not to be, you know, going out.
Right. I think it has to be that way if we're going to, because, you know, they're God's child, not ours. And if they don't want to, you know, go on, then that's God's responsibility, not ours. Yeah, Tom.
Starting a new work, you have a temptation, like I did, to try to do what we were doing in Lincoln with 12 guys who were, have been around a couple of years. In other words, I tried to get a young guy who just became a Christian, started doing CMS and so on, to lead them in Bible study. Well, that doesn't work. That throws them completely off base. So I've just been praying about, well, God, how long do you know, I'm going to be this guy on the wheel. That's what he's going to know Jesus Christ. But how long does it take before God really drinks him or that really starts to grow before he can begin to do what I would call minister to other men? There seems to be a time lag. When you start the ministry, you fool yourself and with these few men respond. But then you have to build them up. You just continue to evangelize them, but you don't try to get them ministering to other men until they are ready to do it themselves. I mean, so God.
Okay, now your question is how long?
How long does it take?
Okay.
And then you push them back.
We need some. Okay, Bill, you kind of went through the whole gamut on the work. How long? Do you want time wise? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we wait, say, a year or 6 months, or some guys are ready a couple
meetings before you relegate certain responsibilities?
Well, responsibility is there for a Bible study. You know, with ministering to other Christians.
Well, I say, you know what? Now, I thought it was death and done.
Yeah. What key man is this? Scripturally, we have some examples. We're about 3 minutes over here. Jesus, look through the New Testament. Jesus did this. It looks like when he was new, he was working with these guys and they were completely new, he gave them exact instruction as to what to do. I mean, think of these two birds that went down to pick up this, the donkey, yeah. He says, now, I want you to go down to the city, and when you get there, there'll be a woman with a pot on her head, and I want you to follow her. And then when you get to where she's going, there'll be an ass tied, and I want you to untie it. And if they say anything to them, you tell them this, and then you think they're talking to little kids. But then later on, he kind of got them together, the same bunch. He said, now I want you to go out to these cities, and he gave them what to take along, little guidelines, what to take along, where they should stay when they're there, and what they should tell them, and then come back and report. And there was little guidelines. They could do things as long as they fit in this guideline. Then they came back and report, and there was one thing that was outside the guideline. There was this other guy they met who was preaching the gospel, and they didn't know what to do with him. See? Hey, now wait. You know, we didn't have a guideline on this. See? It really frustrated them, so they ran back and said, what do we do about this guy? He's out there preaching the gospel. And we told him to join in our little guidelines, and he wouldn't do it. See? And so then as they came back to ask instruction, he says, wow. So he kind of explained another little guideline over here. Of, you know, how you do it. But then later on, he came down and he said, okay, gang, you know, go get the world. See ya. Heaven. I mean, so it was kind of greater responsibility. So I think we have to kind of do that, you know. Just a new guy, we say, how about setting up the benches? See, now put two benches here and two benches there and a table and carry the cookies over there and can you handle that? See, and then next time it's saying, why don't you line up the room? And the next time saying, why don't you handle a conference? So it's, you know, greater responsibility. I see the herd is moving. So I'm sure we could go on. We sure haven't covered, you know, a lot of the stuff here, but maybe some of this stuff will be helpful. Raj, how about closing in prayer? Would you please?